There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome into NFL Live. Tim Hasselbeck, Damian Woody, Coach John Fox with us here on this Tuesday. Guys, it's been just only 2 days. I feel like it's been a week since the Super Bowl yet. I think we're also kind of marinating and digesting on maybe who's to blame, who could have done a little bit better.
All depends on how you look at it.
But meantime, on the good side of all of this, the Kansas City Chiefs obviously still celebrating and enjoying life, minus their MVP, Patrick Mahomes, who was at Disney World. More on that in just a few. Well, the Chiefs, they're back at home yesterday, carrying their franchise's first Lombardi Trophy in half a century. Kansas City holding a Super Bowl parade. Guys, this is going to be tomorrow at 12:30 Eastern, and you're going to be able to see it right here on NFL Live with us if you want to check that out. But back to Mahomes, right? So this is awesome, all right? The Chiefs quarterback tweeted this on February 6, 2013. This was 3 days after the Ravens beat the Niners in Super Bowl 47. He said, I bet it feels amazing to be the quarterback to say, I'm going to Disney World after winning the Super Bowl. And he fulfilled his dream Monday at Disney World, first with a riveting turn on the Star Wars Rise of the Resistance attraction, then with his own parade at Magic Kingdom, because why not? The Super Bowl MVP actually told our Jenna Lane that when I won the game and they came up and told me that I'd won the MVP, it was amazing just to be able to say those words and to be here now. I tried to dream it. I tweeted it. I kind of spoke it into existence. So, see, guys, you just got to say it out loud. Well, at 24, he could be making trips back to Disney. Mahomes is the second youngest quarterback to win a Super Bowl, sandwiched between Big Ben and Tom Brady on that list. Big Ben, of course, won another Super Bowl. Brady, five more of those. Scott Van Pelt, well, he caught up with Patrick Mahomes after that Disney parade.
You're the youngest guy ever to be the MVP of the league and win a Super Bowl and be a Super Bowl MVP. And yet it seems like to you, this all kind of feels right and normal. I guess, are these realities in line with what you dreamed would happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more than I dreamed what could happen coming into the NFL at this age. But I think I was put in a great situation, and I always talk about it. But to be able to learn from Alex Smith and then be with Coach Reed and to have the playmakers I have around me with the culture of winning, I was put in the perfect situation, and I try to maximize it every single day. And it's been good so far, and I'm going to try to keep it going.
When you have already done this much at such a young age, how does it change, if at all, kind of your view looking forward of what you hope might be?
Yeah, I mean, you just want to go out there and do more. You want to go out there and win more Super Bowls. You want to go out there and keep competing with this team. And you understand it's a hard process. It's hard to get there. But with the guys I have around me, we have the attitude and the mindset to go out there and try to do this again next year.
How long will it take you to get back to the people in your phone?
It's going to take a while. I have like 270 messages right now, so I'm going to have to spend the whole day on it after the parade or something.
Have you had any chance to sort of see, like, wait, I don't even know who this is. Holy crap, that's so-and-so. Have you had that moment where somebody you really admire has reached out?
Yeah, I think the funniest thing is, as I was looking through the messages, I had a message from Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, Troy Polamalu, Brooks Koepka, Bobby Wagner, all these guys, and just have that support and from everybody from different sports. I mean, it just shows that it was special what we did, and I have a lot of respect for those guys, and I appreciate them reaching out.
That's so cool. Tim, I'm sorry he didn't mention you there. I know you were blowing him up after that one-time meeting.
He was down for it.
Where?
Right? So Mahomes' expected record payday will have a ripple effect on the rest of the team, right? So he signed through 2020 with the fifth-year option in 2021. One of the team's best defensive players, Chris Jones, he's a free agent. Then we got Travis Kelce, could be in big demand there with an extension in the next year or so, right? So this is where we're at. You hear Mahomes. He just wants to win more. You see the relationship that he has with Andy Reid. That hug, that shot, I could watch that over and over. Just goes to show you that type of care that they have for one another. But that said, he's underpaid at this point. He's going to have to be paid. Coach, you've won Super Bowls with quarterbacks on the cheap. You've won quarterbacks that are expensive. How do you manage a team when you know you have a quarterback that you're going to probably have to pay $40 million?
Well, I mean, he's going to get his for sure. I don't know if it'll be immediately or even be in the next year. Maybe they're doing the same thing this time a year ago or a year from now, and he may not have it quite yet. But he's going to get it. He knows it. And I think, you know, you see the type of guy he is, and he's going to maintain that. He's going to be the same guy, which is really critical. And then really the decision-making going forward, whether it's in the draft or what you do decide your players, how much and who.
Yeah, I think this idea, though, that you can't win a Super Bowl, as you see, I mean, Eli Manning, in terms of, you know, how he was paid, and Peyton Manning the year after, you know, Coach had him in Denver. Like, you can, like the reality with football teams is there's five guys making the majority of the money, and then everybody else is on a rookie or a league minimum deal for the most part. And so I think there's this notion that you can't do it if you're paying your quarterback $30 million plus a year. And I don't think that's the reality of it. The reality is the cap keeps going up. Yeah. If you want to be good and be able to go 13-3 or 14-2, you need a really good quarterback. I mean, you do. And so you need to pay those guys. And so, yeah, if you're fortunate enough to be in a scenario like the Seahawks were with Russell Wilson early on, or, you know, or even, you know, similar to what the Niners were kind of dealing with, not like Jimmy Garoppolo, even though it was a big contract, not like the one that Patrick Mahomes is going to sign. Yeah, can it help you with some other resources? Sure it can. But having a guy that's really talented and really good at that position is still probably the most important thing. And so I just think this notion that you can't do it if you pay him $40 million a year, I just don't buy it.
Yeah, and I don't think Kansas City is going to want to go forward without making sure he's getting paid that money. And then you always have the hometown discount situation. I know for you, you won two Super Bowls with the Patriots. You wound up leaving to go to Detroit for a bigger, better deal for you, for what worked for you financially. Mm-hmm. When you look back at that process, was that hard to walk away from New England if they weren't going to pay you, to go somewhere where maybe you knew that you couldn't win?
Well, I think like my situation was, you know, I met with Coach Belichick and Scott Pioli, the general manager at the time, and it was once I heard them say, you know, we're going to let you test the market, I already knew that that was it. Because I knew going into free agency, I was going to be, you know, probably the highest guy in free agency. And once you get out there and teams start throwing crazy money around, you can't turn it down. It becomes so much, it's just almost impossible to really turn it down. And that's what's going to happen. Teams that are not good, they clamor for guys that are part of winning organizations, and they're willing to spend big bucks to try to bring a piece of that culture to their organizations, and that's what happened in my particular situation, and there's going to be guys that's going to have to deal with a similar situation.
You know, and the reality is, too, Damian, is, you know, players fought hard for free agency.
Correct.
Now, you know, they have it. Sometimes they have to leave.
Yes.
People throw that much money at you, and really for your family and your future, you have to leave.
That's
it's kind of the part of the business and where it is now.
I think it's all clear that Patrick Mahomes is going to return to Kansas City. They're going to pay him. Is there somebody else on that roster that you guys are seeing that is sort of a must-sign kind of guy? You think that they need to?
I think defensive tackle Chris Jones. I think he's a big part of that Kansas City Chiefs defense. He's an interior pass rusher. Coach, you know this. I can make the claim that an interior pass rusher is more valuable than an edge rusher.
And in many ways, you're right.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the guys that the Kansas City Chiefs I think absolutely need to retain.
I don't think it ends up getting them right now, but where it starts to get them is, okay, all of a sudden, like, you pay Mahomes, you know, $40 million a year, say, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, you know, Tyreek Hill needs a new deal, and, you know, Eric Fisher, maybe we need to figure out something with our left tackle, and, hey, you know, Damian Williams now, like, some of the people are interested in Damian Williams, and, you know, Mecole Hardman, like, that's just on the horizon. And Kelsey, by the way, he's looking around at what some of these other tight ends are making. Like, that's when it starts to get difficult, but that's the job of the front office and the people that are making decisions to go, hey, look, like we need to let that guy go.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't keep him. And so that's why I just think, like, that's what the good teams do. The good teams go, okay, yeah, we're playing the quarterback, and we have to make a tough decision on that guy. Listen, it's no different than what happened to you. They're like, all right, look, here's the deal. Like, we love Damian Woody, but the problem is that if we pay him and make him the highest paid guard in football, well, then all of a sudden we can't sign these other guys. And so we're going to lose one of our best offensive players. And we're going to try to just make do with somebody else, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all the time. I remember in Denver, I mean, it was either going to be Derek Wolfe or Malik Jackson. You can't have both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to make decisions. You make the decision, and then you have to replace them through the draft or in more moderate free agent signings.
You know what, though? You know what his mistake was?
What?
Is he went to free agency as a guard.
Yeah, he's working with you.
Should have went as a tackle like he did the next time around. Go as a tackle.
I did all right that time, too.
So we promised you that we bring Todd McShay in because he's got his Todd McShay mock draft 2.0 out, and he is here in studio. And, of course, we can't have Todd without Mel Kiper Jr. along with us. Not in studio, but he's joining us to give some of his takes here because we know you guys don't always agree on everything, and there's some issues you guys have with the quarterback. So I want to hop into that. We'll get to defense later in the show, but we got to talk about Joe Burrow. Todd, you have him going to the Bengals, crystal clear, but do you see any issues with this being a good fit for Joe?
I mean, first of all, you're going to make about $34 million guaranteed money if you're the first overall pick. So that part of it is a good fit. I'd like to see Cincinnati be able to step up and find the right people to put around him. And I think that's the big question. You've heard Carson Palmer come out and say that the organization hasn't tried to chase a Super Bowl and do all the right things. So, but Joe's got the right mentality. He's an Ohio guy, and he's going to go in, and if he is the first overall pick, which I think Mel and I both agree on, he'll go in and he will become that leader, and he'll bring what they need to the table. It's just a matter of the organization getting everything put together.
Yes, figuring out what they're going to do with A.J. Green. You know, right. I feel like that was the biggest question mark of this season. I still can't even tell you what happened there and what they're going to do going forward. But obviously, he could be a gigantic piece, you know, if they were to draft Joe.
And with Burrow, the difference between 2018 and 2019, it wasn't all Joe Brady coming in, but it was a new coordinator and someone who was willing to open things up and let him play and let him be the guy that he really had always been in high school. And he was at Ohio State, and he had played a system where it was open, and there were a lot of different things going on. Then he goes to LSU in 2018, and it's just hand off the ball, third and eight, that now we're going to throw. He needs the right system around him, and obviously the right playmakers.
Yeah. Mel, are we missing anything here when we're talking about Joe Burrow going number one to the Bengals here?
Well, first of all, the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, they had the worst record, certainly 2-14, number one pick overall, but they almost beat Seattle in game one at Seattle, lost 21-20, and they didn't quit. Last seven games, six of those final seven games, they were highly competitive, won two of those, four of those losses were by 8 points or less. This is a team that has some pieces, and I think you look at Joe Burrow in a division now with Baker Mayfield if he goes there, certainly Lamar Jackson. We'll see what the Steelers do after Ben, but I think it's an organization, obviously, like I said, late in the year, final seven games, they were highly competitive in most of those games.
All right, so let's move on to Tua, which, Todd, you've got him slotted at number five to the Dolphins, but everyone's going to just ask the same question here, which is how comfortable would you feel taking him given that the health concerns we have?
This is the hardest question to answer. And we're going to be talking about it for the next few months, and I understand it. But just talking to general managers in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl and medical staff and head coaches, everyone has the same answer. It's just wait and see. Nobody knows exactly how this is going to progress. Tua is so good in part because of how quick twitch he is and how he can go from one read to the next and how his body moves and how quickly he does things. And if this hip doesn't heal and it's not the same, or 5-6 years down the road, which a lot of people I talk to in the league are worried that it could become degenerative, then that takes away from his value. But if he's 100% and you were to guarantee me right now that Tua is back to the Tua before the hip injury, we would have a great debate for that number one spot, because I think he's just as good, if not better, than Joe Burrow.
Oh, yeah. It changes your entire draft board, I think, and the effects it would have on where the quarterbacks go. I'm sure you saw that Miami Dolphins owner Steve Ross came out and said that he visited with him, and his concern is his health. He was very honest about it. He wasn't trying to say, like, oh, we're not too worried about it. It's not that serious. So then we got Justin Herbert here, the Oregon quarterback named Senior Bowl MVP last month, but You don't have him going higher than 13, though.
I know. All right.
So what's that about?
I just haven't bought in completely, to be honest.
What's
I think
issue?
He had a great week at the Senior Bowl, and it was good to see the players rally around him. He's an introvert. He's not your classic leader, if you will, at the quarterback position. He's never had to carry a football team. It's always been run first at Oregon, and Mario Cristobal, that's what he wanted to do as a former offensive lineman, as the head coach. Herbert has so much talent. He is so gifted, and I think he can be very good, but I haven't seen the consistency with the decision-making and with the accuracy, and that's what really concerns me. And listen, you look at some of these teams. I get it, 5, Miami, Chargers at 6, Panthers at 7. Those are 3 teams right there, and he could easily wind up going in those spots. I have a hard time pulling the trigger on this guy. I just don't know that he's what you want in a top 10 pick.
A little bit of a different story for you, Mal, right? So you had Herbert going 6th overall to the Chargers in your first mock. So why the difference of projection between you and Todd here?
Diana, send him back to mock draft school detention.
Oh, here
McShay.
We go.
It's not about what he buys into. It's about where the guy's going to go. It's not his rating. Todd, you know that. It's a mock draft.
It's February, bud. We're just warming up.
Let me just say, this would mean that Herbert dropped further down in the draft than a Blaine Gabbert, a Jake Locker, a Christian Ponder. That's not going to happen.
It doesn't
you know
make
that
it
as
right,
well as
though,
I do.
Mel. It doesn't make it,
it
right.
Doesn't, it doesn't matter. This is a mock draft, and we don't care about what's right, wrong, ratings, whether you're not buying in. This
Some
is where
of us have morals.
Go.
Some of us have standards, Mel.
Here we go.
It's 2.0. Like, can we wait
He's going higher
12.0?
Than 13.
I'll have 9.0. Mel will create like 12 more after that.
Mel's is coming out in 2 weeks.
Diana, we'll have him at 6 on mock number 2. Or 3. Not mock 3. We'll have him at 6. Okay.
All right. So
I love you, Mel.
Right now you do. And let's stick with the theme of love, because Utah State quarterback Jordan Love also participated in the Senior Bowl, which I know you're there. So why not him or a 4th quarterback in the first round? What's your issue here, Todd?
He's talented. He didn't complete 60% of his throws this year. He only had a couple more touchdown passes than interceptions. He, against LSU, and understandably, they were so overmatched, but he played terribly in that one big game that he had against LSU. He lost a lot of parts, and I get it. And physically, you see it, the talent's there. He needs to be developed properly. He needs time. He needs to go in the right situation. If you told me right now that he goes to the New Orleans Saints and has a year or two to sit and can be coached properly, yeah, he's going to have a really good career. If he goes to a lot of other programs, then I don't buy it.
Okay. All right, we're still just warming up. Mel, thanks for hanging out with us. We're going to come back to you and talk defense later, and then sure. Later we're going to shoot a great mock 2.0 special that Todd is going to lead the way. We're going to have that over on ESPN2 at 5 o'clock Eastern, so make sure you guys check that out. But Mel will be joining us soon. Welcome back to NFL Live. Free agent Greg Olsen will visit the Bills, Redskins, and Seahawks. This is according to our Adam Schefter. The soon-to-be 35-year-old, officially released by the Panthers on Monday, is free to sign elsewhere immediately. He said he wants to keep playing there, and we know that he's got those ties there to Buffalo and D.C. Bills GM Brandon Beam came over from Carolina, and new Redskins head coach Ron Rivera obviously coached Olsen for a number of years, so they know each other well. Meantime, the Lions, they continue to discuss an extension, but the expectation exists that cornerback Darius Slay will be on the trade market this offseason. This according to our Jeremy Fowler. Slay has not been too happy with his contract in the past. Remember, guys, he sat out part of those voluntary workouts to try to get some leverage there. He did report, though, played in 14 games, also a Pro Bowler this year. Also, some more notes that you guys may want to know about. The Browns, they hired 49ers passing game coordinator and defensive backs coach Joe Woods as DC, and the Jags will play a second home game in London in 2020, becoming the first team to play 2 international games in a season. That's really become their home there. Meantime, back to the Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan has been on the wrong end of 2 of the 3 largest fourth quarter blown leads in Super Bowl history. Probably does not like hearing that right now. After the 10-minute mark in the fourth quarter of those 2 Super Bowls, Shanahan's teams were outscored 46-0. He was criticized for his play calling in both losses. But you look at that and you hear that stat that the defense wasn't exactly helping him out. I think we always forget here when we're discussing Kyle that he wasn't the head coach of the Falcons. He was the offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn runs the defense there, and they let up that many points. But that being said, Tim, you know, taking a look at this, do you feel like Shanahan or Jimmy Garoppolo let the 49ers down here towards the end of the game?
Jimmy Garoppolo, it's not close. And the reality is everyone's trying to be critical of Kyle Shanahan. He called good plays. You know, and everyone wants to point to, you know, them getting the football back with about 5 minutes left. There's about 5.5 minutes left in the football game, running it on first down. It's first and five and second and five. Everyone's saying, oh, hey, run the football. So everyone's being critical of Kyle Shanahan. The truth of the matter for Kyle Shanahan is he put his team in an awesome position to be successful. The quarterback did not late in the game. The quarterback did through 3.5 quarters, but he did not once they got the football back just inside of 6 minutes.
And let's not forget now, Kyle Shanahan's been in the Super Bowl as the offensive coordinator 4 years ago, and now as a head coach, he's got his team back there. He's one of the top 4 or 5 play callers in the National Football League.
I would agree.
All right, so then are you guys looking at this? I kind of feel like I know how you're seeing it, and perhaps you. But, Dave, for you, are you seeing this as just an epic collapse by them or just a tremendous comeback from the Chiefs?
No, I'm looking at it. I want to give credit where credit is due with the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, to be able to – you got to understand, Pat Mahomes was off for like 3.5 quarters. Like, he was really – he wasn't playing very good football. And for a quarterback to be able to find his rhythm at the most critical juncture in the game, to me, that just speaks volumes to how great of a player that he is. Once they went hurry up, I thought that was critical. And coach knows this, when you go hurry up, the pass rush starts to wear down a little bit. You know, the juice off that pass rush tends to die down. And that's when Pat Mahomes really, you know, got the best out of his, you know, we saw the best of him in that critical juncture in the game. So I'm giving credit to Pat Mahomes and the playmakers they had on offense.
I remember a few years ago, I guess it must have only been about a year ago, I ran into Doug Peterson at the Combine, and I asked him, all right, tell me the truth. How many times did you watch the Super Bowl? You won it? What was it like? You know? He's like, all right, I'll just tell the truth. Probably like 60 times. Like 60 times? You've been on the other side of it. You've lost big Super Bowls or Super Bowl. How long did it take for you to go back and just watch this thing?
I think it's unique, and again, I think it's unique with all the coaches as well, and it was unique for me in different types of Super Bowls. I was in one as a coordinator in 2000 with the Giants, and then again in 2003 when I was with the Panthers, and I didn't watch the 03 one because it was such a devastating loss and close game, really for almost a full year after that game. It took that long to go back and look at it, and it's just an abrupt ending to a great season, which is hard. You saw that on Kyle Shanahan's face in that post-game interview. It is just devastating. Yep. And sometimes you look at it right away. Sometimes it takes a lot of time, and everybody's different.
What was the hardest one for you to swallow?
I really think, even though the 2001 was a little bit of a blowout, and so was the 2014 one, but it was probably the 03 one just because it was one kick, and we were just so close. To be that close to hoisting that trophy and not getting there, it was devastating.
Yeah, and you could see why that would take so much time. I feel like it's going to take a bit for Kyle Shanahan here, and I still think the comments he had to say about Jimmy Garoppolo in the postgame are so interesting. I'm sure we're going to probably be dissecting that over the next few days or next few months, probably. Back here on NFL Live, just when you thought you could take a breath, football fans, the NFL Scouting Combine, it's only 3 weeks away. We're 5 weeks away from free agency and over 2 months away from the draft. So really, everyone thinks that the NFL season goes on break right now. No, it doesn't, because it just keeps on going. And if you want to know how you know it keeps on going, it's when we bring this guy in studio, Todd McShay, of course, coming out with his mock draft 2.0. So it's early stages, right? How high do we go?
I don't know. Ask Kuiper. He always adds. I think we should do 3 or 4.
Yeah. Hi, Mel.
Mel wants to do about 9.
Mel's with us,
5.
Too.
5.
Yeah. All right. So we'll go up to 5. Mel's got his coming up on February 18th. But Todd has.
Mel looks so serious already. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Todd's is ready to brawl, because I don't think you guys agree too much on any of this. We talked a bunch of offense earlier in the show. Let's get into some of the defensive prospects. So let's start Ohio State defensive end Chase Young. You've got him going to Washington at 2nd overall, Todd. Can he have the same impact that we saw defensive rookie of the year Nick Bosa do with the 49ers with this pick? What do you think?
He can. And
I
love Nick Bosa. I love Joey Bosa. I think this guy's more talented. He might not be quite as developed at this point in terms of his hand usage and leverage and some of the little things. But he is so explosive. He's so athletic. Chase Young, to me, is the best player in this draft class. And if I'm Washington, I'm praying that the number one overall pick is Joe Burrow so that we can get this guy and bring him in and really solidify that defensive front and that defense that has some talent on it.
Yeah. All right, Mel, let's stay with Ohio State here. We'll stick with the theme. You agree on Young's Buckeye teammate, Jeff Okuda, going to the Lions at number three. Todd has him going there. So what makes him worthy of this top three pick for you?
Well, they like a pass rusher, but Okuda is a complete corner. And I think in today's NFL, you got to be able to tackle. Coverage skills are outstanding. He had a heck of a year. Think about Marshon Lattimore coming out of that Buckeye program. A couple others didn't play up to the where they were drafted, but Lattimore certainly has. You look at Okuda for that team, opposite Darius Slay for Matt Patricia. It's what they need. Obviously, adding a pass rusher to help out Flowers will be obviously in the cards as well, but I think Okuda at three is not too high for a corner. Love Patrick Peterson when he came out. Okuda's grade is similar to what Peterson's was years ago when he came out of LSU.
Yeah, quite the compliment there. So, Todd, you have got the New York Giants having lots of issues on their defense, which is a very good prediction by you, because they do. So what makes Clemson outside linebacker Isaiah Simmons their pick at number four here? Why is that good?
We'd be breaking trends. Jeff Okuda would be the first-round draft pick at the defensive back position since Terry Fair in 1998. And, Mel, I'm giving you some history lessons. I wasn't even in high school. I think middle school. But Isaiah Simmons would be the first linebacker by the Giants taken in the first round since Carl Banks in 84, I want to say. So what he brings to the table is versatility.
Yeah.
And Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator, was able to utilize him in so many different ways. You saw him as a single high safety there. He's playing inside the box at times. He does it all. He can rush the quarterback. He can cover. He's what you really love in today's NFL in terms of trying to match up and being able to keep the same guys on the field, especially against tempo.
Hey, Mel, who jumps out at you in the bottom half of the first round from what you can see from what Todd's got up here?
I'll go back to the linebacker, Diana. For Todd, you know, talking about Isaiah Simmons, Kenneth Murray getting down there late in the first round to the Baltimore Ravens. I think the versatility of Murray, chiseled frame, fast to the football. He had 102 tackles this past season. That's 27 more than the number two guy on that tackle chart for Oklahoma. And 2 years ago in 2018, 155 tackles. That was most by a Sooner defender in 12 years. Kenneth Murray, I think, will test out well. Combine, pro day, run probably in a 4.5 range, low 4.5s. Kenneth Murray, if he gets down to Baltimore, would be, I think, a nice pick. Patrick Queen, linebacker LSU, may be in the mix as well there. Ravens needing help at that spot. But that would be a steal, I think, if Murray gets down that far.
Got anyone else here that you're really
sure? I love Zach Bond.
Yeah, I know. I can see you're love staring
Bond,
at his name
Wisconsin.
Like a creep. All right, guys. Guys, how about this? One of the coolest plays at the Super Bowl. Direct snap to Damian Williams, delivered that crucial first down on 4th-and-1. And then we just saw the big old flip dance there. Andy Reid borrowed this play from the Rose Bowl.
My brother's high school coach was actually in that game for USC, and so I had a little bit of tape. We went back through and pulled that out. We actually have a whole package of it, so you have to wait till next year to see the rest. But there's some good stuff.
We've worked on that play since the first day of OTAs and on the OTAs phase two, just working on that play. We, like Coach Reed, we have a whole package where we were working on it, and we kept working on it every single week and kept working on it and executing it and doing it the right way, right, waiting for the perfect time to call it. And when we were there and Coach said it, I was like, it's time, let's do it. And we all spun around, everybody did it the right way. Damian had a great catch on the snap, and then he hit it up the middle. And so I think just that practice, you never know when those plays are going to get called, but you just keep working and try to perfect them every single time you get an opportunity to.
Just knowing how much time they spend on it, going back to OTAs, which, you know, sometimes I think fans were just kind of like, look to the side on it. You're not thinking how seriously it's taken. But look, a play, a crucial play, fourth down, you know, in the Super Bowl to take a risk like that. Coach, for you, you know, when you installed stuff like this, what goes into it? How much are you really working on it?
Well, you really are trying to. It's an element of surprise. And so, you know, it takes reps to get good at plays. And so when you don't see, whether it's two-point plays, could be just short yards. In that situation, that was a goal line slash short yardage play. they do carry over. A lot of these trick plays we'll look at and you've seen in the past are plays that carried over maybe from a month, maybe not all the way back to training camp, but typically they've been around for a minute and then you break them in critical times, and nothing like in the middle of a Super Bowl that it's a critical
play. 1948, though. It's not like we're talking about a couple years ago where he saw this play. This went
back. But it's still effective.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it, all it is a direct snap dive. So the play itself is simple. It's just the eye candy to get ready for the play.
Here's my question. So they held this in their back pocket for the entire season, yet they practiced it every single day. Why do you think they held it for so long?
Well, I think part of it is, like, you need an opportunity to run some of these plays. So it's good, like, the right opportunity has to come up.
Yeah.
And also, say they installed, like, a package of this stuff in OTAs. So you may be running in some OTAs, but then you're not always going to run it. You know, like, all of your practices you're not going to have time to run some of this, you know, to run this prep package and practice the various things that you have going off of it. And so, you know, kind of put it in perspective, yeah, maybe it went in the springtime. And maybe it was up a few weeks, depending on who they were playing throughout the season. And then they decided to have it up, you know, for the Super Bowl. So in the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, you either walked through it or ran it probably fewer than six times.
Yeah.
You know, is the reality of it. Now, it's why, like, you're referencing why OTAs and stuff matter. Like, it had become familiar, you know, way back in the spring. And you can't work on it all season long. And then you kind of just dust it off and freshen it up a little bit. I mean, that's how it goes.
Yeah. Back here on NFL Live, this free agent class of quarterbacks is poised to be the most decorated ever. Sometimes I look at this and I can't believe this. This group's got 39 combined Pro Bowl selections, headlined by Breeze, Brady, Rivers, and Dak. That's 16 more than any other quarterback classes in free agent history, which headlines Brett Favre and Randall Cunningham. Now, Tom Brady and Drew Brees, of course, going to be making a lot of headlines as they try to figure out where they are going to wind up. So let's focus, guys, here on a group of quarterbacks that we feel could be on the move this offseason. So we're going to leave Drew Brees off. We're not sure, you know, if he's going to go back to the Saints, if he's going to retire. Dak Prescott, he'll be most likely in Dallas.
Most likely.
Right?
Strong possibility.
I don't want to jump ahead of myself there just yet. But so what's going to be a good fit for quarterback who could be on the move? Tim, let's start with you.
Start with me? Well, Andy Dalton. I don't think there's so much, you know, assumption that Joe Burrow ends up in Cincinnati. Andy Dalton's a guy that I think, you know, could be one of those guys that is a kind of premier backup. And if you look at the situation with the Colts, Jacoby Brissett, their starter, they're not paying him so much that they can't afford to pay really good backup money to a guy that's won a bunch of games, that's been, you know, a playoff quarterback. And so I could see Andy Dalton being paid kind of like the Nick Foles contract, where he's like, hey, $7 million a year as a backup. Maybe it's even a little bit more than that. You can afford that if you're the Colts and you have a guy that can play at a starter level. So I think the Colts would be a good fit for Andy Dalton.
Dave, what do you got? Who do you like up here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Teddy Bridgewater.
Hold on, let me help you out, Dave.
Help me out.
Where's Teddy?
Yeah, I got it.
You got this.
You messing me up.
Well,
see?
Go ahead. And
okay.
Right.
I'm going to go with Teddy Bridgewater here. We know that the New Orleans Saints have all three of their quarterbacks that are unrestricted free agents. All of them can't come back. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go with Teddy Bridgewater. I'm going to go with the Chargers. Mm. We know that Phillip Rivers is. His time with Los Angeles Chargers is over. Teddy Bridgewater seems like a quarterback. He had some starting experience this year with the New Orleans Saints, won some games with them. I think that would be a good fit for Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, and we have to figure just the way the Saints have been so public about their love for Taysom Hill. You know, I mean, so
it doesn't
much,
help when you're trying to resign a guy that wants to play.
It really doesn't, especially when you're making these comparisons to great starting quarterbacks that, you know, Sean Payton believes that Taysom Hill can turn into. Back up here, you know, I'm seeing two players here that are on the Titans currently, but Coach Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill, what do you think they could go and fit?
I think it's probably pretty safe to say Ryan Tannehill's a good chance of staying in Tennessee. Whereas on the flip side of that, Marcus Mariota, I think, is going to be moving on. So a team I like him going to is the Chicago Bears. And the reason why is, I think, you know, obviously with Mitch Trubisky, he's a guy that they're not giving up hope on yet, that he's going to still be the starter. But I think that they're going to have to bring in somebody that's got NFL experience behind him. A guy I know, Ryan Pace and Josh Lucas, personnel people with the Bears, like a lot, liked him coming out of the draft. So I can see on a similar deal that you talked about as Andy Dalton. Dalton, Timmy, going to Chicago Bears with as a legitimate NFL starter, has had success in case things don't go well with Mitchell Trubisky.
All right, so we saw this weekend, we saw Tom Brady down on the field, of course, to celebrate the 100 years of the NFL. There were some rumors this weekend, too, that Brady was looking in the city that you live in, down in Nashville. Tom Brady, guys, where do you think he's going back to New England?
I think there's no question he's back in New England. That's my personal feeling on that. What do you think?
I would agree with you. Yeah, I just, and I think when so we look at this, Philip Rivers, out of the guys that are left, like if Brady's back in New England, Tannehill's in Tennessee, Derek Carr's back with the Raiders, and Philip Rivers is the one guy that you're like, okay, wait a second, he's going to end up somewhere else, because I do think Cam gets another year in Carolina. Rivers is the guy that would potentially, you know, be on the move, but I think Brady's back in New England.
Yeah, Cam, my last one. And then we got to go.
I can't agree with Tim.
Do you think Brady's back in New England?
Yeah, you're right. He hasn't said it.
You are the New England guy.
Do you?
I don't.
You don't?
Wow.
All right, can we do another segment on this now? Coming up, Damian Woody on why he believes he's going where?
I think Las Vegas Raiders makes – I'm thinking of that TB12 –
in Las Vegas?
On the Strip? TB12 Strip?
I think other people are they're doing other
I think it's going to be a bidding war.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that would be the smart thing to do, right? Yes. Have the Chiefs even slept yet? I don't think so. Based on social media, I feel like everyone is just on Twitter and Instagram tweeting away everything that they're doing. I'm assuming Travis Kelce hasn't done any of that. Super Bowl parade tomorrow, 12:30 Eastern. You can catch it right here on NFL Live. We're going to show you as much as we can. Now, our Jeff Darlington caught up with some of the best of a very jubilant Kelce after the Super Bowl. Take a listen.
Travis Kelce, how does it feel? I'll tell you what, baby, it feels outstanding.
Thank you very much. Enjoy
it. Kansas City, we fight it for our right to Lombardi, baby. Coming home with that trophy, baby. Kansas City, I love you all.
They are already home, but how about Travis and brother Jason Kelce, who we know play center with the Eagles and really stole the show 2 years ago. Jason raised the bar for Travis as far as the expectations, though, when it comes to this parade with his own MVP performance of the Eagles Super Bowl right there on Broad Street.
If you love the Eagles, let me get a hell yeah! If you love the Philadelphia Eagles, let me get a hell yeah! I'm going to take a second to talk to you about underdogs. And you know what underdogs is? It's a hungry dog. And Jeff Stoutland has had this in our building for 5 years. It's a quote in the O-line room that has stood on the wall for the last 5 years. Hungry dogs run faster. And that's this team. Bottom line is, we wanted it more. All the players, all the coaches, the front office, Jeffrey Lurie, everybody wanted it more. And that's why we're up here today, and that's why we're the first team in Eagles history to hold that freaking trophy.
Hungry dogs run faster. So, you know, Travis already stole the line from his brother. Can he top it? Can he top this?
That's going to be hard to beat. That outfit definitely is going to be hard to beat.
You think he's going to wear something like that?
Well, it'll be in red.
The mummers
it won't
thing?
Be in green.
No, there's no way.
Yeah. I don't know that he could top it. It made me think, I'm disappointed that D. Wood didn't do that when the Patriots won.
Yeah.
He was their center.
Yeah, like why
that
didn't he?
Come on. What?
Chicken
I'm
down?
Have like a red mink on or something like that.
You were like the Chris Long.
Yeah,
you want to do that style with that.